Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Dave Adler here on the Short Coat Podcast. It's been another long week, but I'm happy to be sitting here with Lisa Weir.
Hey, hey.
With Dylan Todd.
Hiya.
Casey McCleary.
I'm eating a Euro.
And Mark. And Mark.
I can't top that.
What up? It's not a Euro.
What is it?
It's a gyro.
I'm sorry. It's
a gyro. If you're eating a Euro, that means you're eating a piece of currency.
Maybe I am. They don't know. We're on the radio.
That's all it's good for.
That's true.
In Greece, I
mean. I love me a good hero. Did you make that your...
No, it's club meeting leftovers. It is the spoils of being a club president.
From where?
Medics now equal meds.
No. I mean the food.
Oh, well, fine. I'm glad you don't care about my club. Sparty's Euros.
All right.
Sorry, Gyros.
Gyros. Gyros.
I'm never going to say it right. I can't even pronounce things in Spanish right. And you know what? I don't care. I don't care.
Okay.
You learned that being out in Mass.
I like
Adonia.
I like your individualism, your rugged individualism.
I don't even pronounce things right in English. You can't put this on me.
I think it's very weird when people try to pronounce things in English or as an English speaker. In the native way.
Well, it's always like when you're getting a glass of wine at a restaurant, and it's like a French wine, but like you don't want to be like pretentious and like say it in the proper French, but then you don't want to sound like an idiot and say it in just like
mumbled
English. I'd like a Pinot Noir.
I want a Cabernet.
Yeah. I'd like one of the Cabernets.
Oh dear.
There was one time I was at
Bojalias.
I was at like a pretty fancy restaurant and I was like, "Oh, I'd like this rosé." And the waiter was like, "Oh, okay, I'll get you the rose."
I know,
I was like, "No, the rosé. I want the rosé."
When they correct you, either way, cuz you'll get a waiter that does it, you'll say it like the French way and they'll correct you, or you'll say it the English way and they'll be like, "Oh, I'll get you XYZ." And I'm like, "Duh, just say it the way
See,
I said it."
I don't think people have like corrected me. So
customers always right.
I've been fortunate. Cuz yeah, that would bug me.
Well, by the same token, I hate when I similarly maybe.
I hate when
I go to like a regular non-ethnic or non-fancy restaurant and they want me to pronounce things in a certain way. Like, I don't want a grande latte. You know what I'm saying? I want a large. I want a
small.
That's
one place that does it. You go to Starbucks and you're like, "Can I get a large coffee?" And they're like, "Okay, one grande coffee." And I was like, "No, large, large,
no,
large."
Shut up.
Oh, wait, actually, grande. I don't even know. Venti is the
only one that doesn't mean large, but it does mean 20, I think. So it's like for a 20.
I think I learned that from Role Models. Have you guys seen that movie?
No.
I'm pretty sure you mentioned that in the beginning. It's a hilarious movie if you haven't seen it.
I mean, I think George Orwell predicted all of this in his body
his
of work.
Original piece, Role Models.
It's mine.
Did you know George Orwell wrote Role Models?
I did not.
Yeah, right before he wrote Step Brothers.
Yeah. And don't ask me to order a Biggie Fries. That just is lame.
Where is
Biggie
that from?
Fries.
Wendy's.
Oh, well, there's your problem. Well,
I actually rather like Wendy's.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, they're rebranding themselves. They're trying to be like the Target of the fast food food market. You know, like a sweet potato fries. So they're trying to appeal to an upscale.
I don't know. I think Panera's already snagged that market.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Remember when Target was fancy? No.
But it has the appearance of fancy.
It's fancier than Walmart.
Yeah. They just wanted to differentiate themselves from Walmart.
There's no website called the People of Target, okay?
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I should make one and just like photograph the most like pretentious people. Like in their like polo gear, like, back from the dressage course.
I think you're mixing up two classes there.
Maybe.
Oh, you guys, I have news.
Yeah?
The Cleveland Clinic is set to perform the first ever uterus transplants.
Wait,
in the U.S.
I didn't know that was
in the U.S. Didn't we talk about this like last spring or this summer or something?
Don't point out when I accidentally recycle.
No, we talked about it in Europe, though. Yeah. I don't think it's happened in the U.S.
So, you know, for some families, the treatment for infertility is like IVF, hormone injections, all that kind of stuff. But some women, apparently, I guess, they when they reach puberty, they don't have a functional uterus in which to keep their babies.
I struggle to understand why you would want one, but that's okay. Without, some people do.
Without one, I mean, it's obviously, you know, without a functioning uterus, it's obviously the end of the story. No amount of other kinds of treatments will, you know, give you a baby. And that, I'm sure, takes an emotional toll on women who desperately want to be mothers.
The Cleveland joke was that Clinic, I don't want babies.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
The Cleveland Clinic has announced that it will launch a groundbreaking study that will include uterus transplants for 10 women. It will take place actually very soon, within the next few months. Women 21 to 39 with uterine factor infertility, a phrase I had never heard before, but which makes a lot of sense, are candidates. It's highly experimental.
Ooh. Do they keep their same ovaries? Like their ovaries work, but their uterus is kind of like...
You know, that's a good question. It wasn't mentioned. It wasn't mentioned. Well, so here's what I know about how... Here's what they said. So it starts with stimulation and freezing of eggs. Then you get a uterus donation from a deceased donor and obviously with the transplant surgery. Then there is a 12-month wait. Then there is implantation. Then there is a C-section birth. And then it is an ephemeral transplant.
So that 12-month wait is pregnancy?
Healing.
Oh, healing. Okay. At least you said there was a birth after that.
Yeah, I kind of did. Anyway.
What if it was like a super baby? Like that long to gestate?
More months.
Yeah, it was like a psionic baby.
It would be so big.
Either I copied it down wrong or this is a very not well thought out procedure.
That's why it has to be a C-section, just like a two-year-old climbs out.
Oh my God.
It's called an ephemeral transplant. So they don't, obviously they don't want to leave the uterus in there because then they'll have to be on immune suppressing drugs for the rest of their life. So they get, you get one, maybe two babies out of that implanted uterus or transplanted uterus. And then,
you got to give it up. They have to be on immunosuppressants while they're pregnant?
I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, sweet Lord.
Yeah, I don't feel like this is a very good
idea. I just feel like this is really... Yeah.
Because people not like... Those organ transplants are not permanent. Mm-hmm. Your body kind of tends to eventually reject them.
Eventually, right.
So that seems very risky for...
On the other hand, in pregnancy, your immune system's kind of down-regulated anyway. I mean, I have an opinion on this, but at the same time, I know women who can't have children or don't want to have children face a lot of stigma, and I don't have children yet, so I don't know if I can pass a judgment on that, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what it's like to be in that position.
But the cost.
The cost is huge.
Cost is huge.
It seems like there's a lot of cost and a lot of medical risk.
Yeah. So to
seems
me,
like a lot of risk to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it's just like, I don't know. Like I do feel some sympathy for women who want to get pregnant and can't, even though I find it hard to relate to them. But I don't know. At the same time, this seems excessive.
You asked, had we talked about this before outside the U.S., and I had forgotten that previous attempts outside the U.S. have not been successful, apparently.
Gotcha. We must have talked about it before they tried it.
This is such a good idea, guys.
So, I think Turkey and Saudi Arabia were among the countries that had tried this, and it wasn't successful. But they think they've got it.
Those seem like unlikely places to have experimental medical breakthrough.
But maybe Turkey, this is Saudi just Arabia, like my Cleveland Clinic.
My... terrible biases coming into play.
Hey, Dave.
You're a terrible person.
It's a good thing to be aware of.
Why is your iPad background just a pile of potatoes?
That is an excellent question.
This is accurate.
It is actually true. It's a pile of... There's a pile of nicely cleaned potatoes. Maybe I'll use this as the image.
It probably should be
for the show. It is a pile of nicely cleaned potatoes, ready to eat, or maybe ready to cook. My daughter is in love with all things potato-y.
It's okay. I'm too.
In fact,
I love all derivatives of potato.
For her birthdays, she sometimes insists on all potato.
Oh.
An all-potato meal, which we indulge her in. Her favorite is mashed potatoes. Anyway, the point is that she likes to change my background.
She would have
without asking me, which I pretend infuriates.
It's got to be a good pun in there.
She would have made a good she would have made a good Irish peasant, but
yeah, well,
for a time.
So, yeah, that's why.
Do you know that if you like don't cook potatoes well enough, they can kill you? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah, green potatoes. Yeah. They have some sort of chemical that's bad for you. I don't know what it is, but don't eat raw potatoes.
Don't do it. Yeah. Okay. Also, after they've sprouted.
Oh yeah, don't eat them after they sprout.
The eyes are.
I don't know why, but
emit some kind of toxin. Yeah, potatoes are really risky, guys.
I eat potatoes. You wouldn't guess. To make me stronger.
Also, don't eat the inside of a peach pit. It looks like an almond, but don't eat it.
Don't eat it.
It's a trap.
I have heard that. So there's
I think so.
That's
or
advice.
Arsenic or I don't know.
Advice you can use, listeners. Don't eat things that are
inedible.
Scientists have breached the blood-brain barrier for the first time without surgery.
What?
Did you read about this?
With what?
What do you mean by
ultrasound?
That?
Ultrasound.
Yeah.
So the blood-brain barrier keeps the brain safe from lots of things like what? Drugs.
Toxins,
mm-hmm. bacteria, things mm-hmm. like that.
Immune cells.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got brain cancer, your doctor will struggle to get chemotherapy drugs to the right place in the brain to treat the tumor. So, the team at Toronto's Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center, which probably, I think, wins my award for the most pleasant sounding.
Sunnybrook.
That's a really nice hospital name.
What do they call the, like psych ward, the babbling brook? Or
what? The team has succeeded in opening the blood-brain barrier temporarily with focused ultrasound, allowing chemo drugs to pass from blood vessels into a tumor.
Huh.
I love all the new things people are figuring out with ultrasound.
That's crazy.
It's such a badass technology.
It's super non-invasive, which is great.
So
it's
heard that that putting gas bubbles into your bloodstream is probably a bad idea, but the chemo drug is encapsulated in tiny gas bubbles. It's injected into the bloodstream. They apply focused ultrasound to the tumor area, which loosens the tight junctions between cells and breaks the bubbles and allows the drug to leave the bloodstream and enter the brain right where it's needed.
Oh, so it doesn't go into other parts of the body as much?
Maybe the bubbles are small enough.
It at least gets more to where you want it than other places. So
that's cool, because I mean, it seems like you could do that with other places too, even if they're not separated. You're not worried about the cell barrier, but I mean, if you had them in little bubbles that you could then break in precisely the right spot. Seems like it'd be a good way to reduce side effects
they use
for like
the ultrasound
anything.
To break the bubbles?
I think the ultrasound breaks the bubbles as well as loosening the the cell wall.
Yeah,
cell
that makes sense.
Junctions.
I feel like if this works, it's got a lot of potential for like targeted, all kinds of targeted cancer delivery. Treatments. Yeah.
It does work, but I think this is they're using it in human patients, right?
Yeah, this is a pilot study of 10 patients.
It works in animals,
But they've studied it for like a decade in animals, and there's some evidence that it can be used to evacuate substances from the brain that you don't want, like amyloid plaques. And that's actually been happened in mice with some improvement in memory.
The skull doesn't interfere with this?
I guess not. I mean, you're not like shouting into it, so. I don't know.
I just feel like encased in bone would interfere with ultrasound.
Yeah, I don't know how do you focus?
The skull is a great drum. I mean,
can you?
It just resonates because have used the skull.
You've ceased being useful.
You can alter like the
grandpa,
depth of ultrasound.
No musical instrument.
Oh my god!
Lisa, explain to us how this really works.
No, can't you alter the depth of ultrasound? And so that's how you could target a specific spot in the brain, because you can change the frequency, and that's how you would probably get past the skull. Is a different frequency.
Mm-hmm. You know what? The other day, Ethan Forsgren.
I thought you almost said like Ethan Forsgren. I was like, oh, it was that is unacceptable.
Worst name ever.
It was pretty close. Ethan Forsgren pulled aside Ellen Franklin in assessment and me and and wanted to talk about ultrasound in the curriculum, and
that we never get taught it.
That we don't yeah. currently have it. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who are interested
like
in this.
We have like an hour session on it.
Yeah,
and that's it.
I mean, there's a lot of people who are interested in this actually here and mm-hmm. wanting to do this. I mean, there's a lot of problems, but with the idea, including the cost of the very cool handheld ultrasound machines that exist now instead of the giant cart. We actually have a giant cart.
I was going to say, I saw the giant cart this week when I was up in the clinical suites.
We have a giant ultrasound cart that's been sitting in a closet, but the plan is to bring it out into the communities and let people fiddle with it.
Yes.
So that should happen soon.
Well, ultrasound, I mean, it's expensive to buy everyone handheld things, but when you're in the clinic, it's a fast and cheap way to see a lot of things.
Is it replace? It's replacing like stethoscopes even in some cases, right? Is that
because you can see stuff in
not
the abdomen? You can see like pneumothorax, all that kind of stuff with an ultrasound.
Yeah, like maybe a stethoscope would be a better a good place to start, but then that could be like an adjunct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like we need to bring in the ultrasound, and then it's still better than like any of the big radiology stuff.
The only problem is if you. I guess if you put the ultrasound machine in the communities, there's only so much you might feel comfortable looking at there.
The other issue is if there's only one machine and like a ton of people are trying to use it.
Right. Well, part of the goal, people, is to, I guess, document how much people really want to use ultrasound.
We should do a video.
By
gauging interest. I mean, you know, so...
You could put it in one of the clinical suites.
Well, the thought is, if you put it in a room...
Then people won't
necessarily see it or think about it. But if you put it, at least for some of the time, out in the communities, then people will see it and go, oh... I want to try this out. I want to give it a whirl. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
when we had the ultrasound curriculum, they showed us this like really dramatic ad for the ultrasound, and it's like someone like rushing to the bedside and like the patient's bleeding out and using the like ultrasound machine.
It was like really dramatic. Is that the one with the like female doctor in heels?
Yeah. She was like running in heels. It was so. You should make a video like that. Promoting the use of the ultrasound machine. Just make it just balls to the wall crazy.
Consider it done.
I am willing to run in heels for the purposes of being exploited in this video.
I was going to ask Mark.
Oh. I'm sure he'd be good at it too. You want to borrow some heels, Mark? What size do you wear?
10.5.
You're going to have to go to Payless.
Damn it.
If you need large women's shoes, though, seriously, Payless has like 11, 12, and I think even 13.
But they're not.
I guess I'll keep that in mind.
But they're not a sponsor, so.
Oh, sorry.
We're not Buzz
we'll
Marketing.
We'll have to go to the less
Payless.
Popular Pay More.
Target.
Yeah. This is the Buzz Market show. We've got Target so far and Payless. We're not very high end. No. I don't know if you've realized.
I mean, we're medical
students.
We did
talk about French wines.
Yeah, and how we mispronounce them.
We got to strike some kind of middle ground.
Peanut noir. Yeah.
Kind of an aside, but when we were talking about, you know, the uterus transplant, I was thinking to myself, designer babies. And like, for the longest time, I just had this mental association of like, oh, like a Prada baby. Like, just like just getting, you know, not
your baby.
Not selecting for
Chanel.
Not selecting for certain genes, just like, you know.
Designer babies.
I feel like it's only it won't.
My baby will
like
be Starbucks
inevitable. I feel like if designer babies actually become a thing, it's inevitable that they will have logos on them physically.
Right.
No. I hope not.
Let's look into the.
I wonder if that's one of those things when we're all old men, we'll be complaining, and women, and we'll be like, the world's changed for the worse. Like they do every generation. there's a distinct trend there. When you get old, it's always better.
So we actually had a really good conversation about gene therapy beyond. For like human enhancement instead of just medical treatment.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating.
That was super, super interesting. And whether it's even reasonable to make a distinction between, you know, medical treatment up to some imaginary normal versus like enhancement to some sort of potentially new normal in the future.
It's an interesting question, right? If we would design ourselves in ways that once we know that it can make us superior in certain aspects, it's kind of interesting, because then you're no longer controlled by evolution, which was the force that brought all life here.
I mean, we're already a little bit beyond evolution.
I know, which is awesome, because for starters, we understand that it's a thing.
It makes me uncomfortable, and you know why? Because it's like breeding livestock. Like, I mean, really?
Well, you know what makes me more uncomfortable, actually, to think about is when you really strip it down, and, like, this is kind of abstract. It's a lot there. But what we are, like, we're, like, DNA propagation vessels. It's, like, what we've been designed
Richard
to do
Dawkins.
Is just reproduce. No, but really,
come
really,
see my new band at the ML.
Everything is, like, an elaborate...
DNA propagation.
It's become so elaborate, but as we've begun to reflect on it and actually think about it, we're almost the product of that has started to understand the system, and it's really interesting to think about how it can, like, we could start to take control
of
it.
I feel like Dave is probably the most successful at this DNA propagation... I mean, he's winning so far.
You are
winning.
You're
so damn fit.
Good job with evolution and that.
Wow. This is like, we all think we're controlling ourselves and the human race, but really the DNA is controlling
us. Oh, Dave has a... Right?
It's a problem.
For now. And less and less, right? Because...
Maybe the DNA...
His era is done.
This is the sad irony. It's like all...
I know. No, it's freaky to think about. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's why I tried to brace you guys. But I think there's an interesting truth in it.
All the people with the good genes will be so educated that they won't reproduce. So...
That's the idiocracy theory of evolution. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. Then so a lot of people, the reason that this makes them uncomfortable is because of the sort of, like, spiritual, like, we're playing God kind of thing. But from, like, a purely... We talked about
Don't tell Kale. Don't tell Kale that it was created by humans. That it wasn't a divine creation. It'll get weird.
It's gonna get weird, man. But I mean, the reason that I found it more compelling that we talked about in class was that there's some risk of, like, making everybody too similar or making us, like, intolerant of sort of imperfection or intolerant of differences.
It's like breeding livestock.
Yeah.
But livestock isn't intolerant of each other.
I'm actually more concerned with the arrogance of it beforehand, like messing around with it, thinking we have a greater understanding of it than we actually do.
Oh, and then making
unforeseen consequences.
Well, the other I read about another thing this week about how, or actually just today, I think, about how there was this massive, it hasn't been published yet, this massive study to catalog all of the most important genes. In other words, the genes that if they weren't there, you'd be dead. The one, you know, if you missed one gene out of this, you would never have lived. And they discovered something like 3,000 or so genes through this massive comparison effort.
I bet a lot of them are genes called homeobox genes, which have a lot to do with patterning and creating your physical structure.
Yeah.
So, there's, you know, so just don't mess with those ones and you'll be good, right?
Well, you'll be different.
Nope. So, but that's our...
How long will you be alive? How well will you be alive?
Yeah. Well, they say there are many more
We've cracked the genome.
Many more to be found.
It's all done.
We broke it.
It's like a glitter bomb that we can't get.
You can't ever pick that back up. But yeah, I don't know. In general, I really like the idea of, like, transhumanism or human enhancement, but I do think we need to approach it with a lot of caution.
Yeah, I agree.
And a lot of self-awareness.
I just want to be...
We've already
done
it for so many generations, so many centuries. We've already done it. It's just now we can do it better and faster than ever.
I don't want to be transhuman. I just want to be better looking, skinnier, and smarter.
Well, that's cool, because it won't happen in your lifetime, so...
That's all. You guys remember episode 62?
Yeah, fondly.
Sure,
yeah,
of course.
I have it all memorized.
Anil Patti is the cancer researcher from Duke who faked his cancer research data. He's HHMI researcher.
I do remember this.
He was outed by a medical student as having faked his cancer research data. Mm. Well, just the other day...
It wasn't for you darn students.
I know.
Gotten away with it.
Just the other day, the Federal Office of Research Integrity has finally delivered their findings that it's true, he's a fraud. that he said in his grant application that, for instance, 6 of 33 patients responded positively to a drug trial, but only 4 patients were actually enrolled and none responded.
So he just made it all up.
Wow, there were you're not even trying, dude.
One figure featured 4 CT scans that were not from the study at all. There was alteration of data sets, disregarding scientific methodology in order to provide false data in 9 retracted papers.
I don't know why people think they can get away with that. I feel like you'll get caught eventually, because the point of it is to be reproducible. And once you can't reproduce it, people start really asking hard questions and then just remove it. Like, it's just,
right.
And then your career is ruined.
Have you, you guys follow RetractionWatch.org?
No.
RetractionWatch.org?
I can't even follow the papers.
Sounds interesting, actually.
RetractionWatch.com. All they do is talk about all of the retractions. Whenever they find a retraction, they talk about and how it came about. It's almost like the Gawker of the research world.
Oh, my God.
Check this out.
Not as funny, but...
what's the comments section like?
I don't know.
Oh, man. I do not even want to think about it.
Side note on uncovering fraud. So there's this principle, it's been proven, that the vast majority of numbers in our society start with 1, and so one of the ways that they find financial fraud is they actually go through all the numbers, and they can see when people have altered numbers, because not as many start with 1. It's a mathematician.
As predicted by,
as would be predicted
system.
By, I know, right? Isn't that awesome?
Does it change with inflation, or like...
Oh, I don't know. No, I don't think so, but, yeah.
Good, one. Do you think hackers could now do the same thing?
Yeah, so if you're gonna commit financial fraud, put lots of ones that starting.
But not too many.
Not too many. Yeah.
So like 1 million as opposed to 5 million?
Yeah.
Will do.
That's been my problem.
Noted. Know how to figure out my FAFSA now.
Dr. Potty has not done research.
Such a terrible name.
Is that better or worse than Mr. Potty?
He hasn't done research since he was caught in 2010, and he neither admits nor denies.
Wait, that was the guy that made the shitty research?
But he does. He does
Flush
practice. I'm gonna just power through. He does still practice oncology in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
There's some key words in there.
Grand Forks.
I think North Dakota and Grand Forks.
They take what they can get.
They need doctors, yeah.
How can you even though... First of all, he's as far as I can tell, this is it. So now that they've come to this finding, that's the end of the road. There's no prosecution, even though Duke had to repay the American Cancer Society $729,000, the part of the grant that Potty had received by the time he was... outed as being a fraudulent researcher. And I just can't believe he still practices oncology. I just feel like, you know...
I'm really torn, because, I mean, like, he might be a really good oncologist, but really unethical, but then, like, I don't know, I feel like there
really
is some...
unethical scientist.
Yeah, he might be a really unethical scientist, but a good doctor.
I
feel like there usually is some overlap in ethical... performance. So, like, how long is it going to be until this crops up in his practice?
I think it's harder to remove an established physician than it is to remove a scientist.
Clearly, because Dr. Oz is still...
And I don't think it necessarily translates, especially if he truly is in a community that needs doctors.
I mean, everyone has warts, right? But,
What?
Not literally.
I will not admit to that.
Only genital warts.
But he has...
I'm not admit to
Dave,
that
Dave, what do you got next?
Go.
I want to hear the end of this.
I'm just saying, everyone has flaws, right?
But,
he has like a oh my God.
Every cowboy.
But he's like a rose bush made up of thorns. That's like taking a briar patch and being like, it's basically a rose bush.
Yeah. Right.
It's close enough. It's half. It's sort of like that.
That's a better analogy. Nicer sounding analogy than the warts one. Appreciate that. So, you guys, I don't want to get too political today.
Because we did it last time.
Insert political.
But
Ben Carson needs to just go practice brain surgery and stop talking.
That's my opinion. Well, this is what I'm going to talk about. Lots of journalists and political observers seem puzzled over our neurosurgeon and presidential candidate Ben Carson. And I find myself sometimes this way too. Like, he seems like such a smart guy. How could he be, how could he have
delusional
the many weird ideas that he has, like Joseph building the pyramids in Egypt in order to store grain, that homosexuality is a choice because people go into prison straight and when they come out they're gay. That's a quote.
Also not a scientific fact.
The military should not be subject to any war crimes law, and that Obamacare is really, I think, the worst thing that has happened in this nation since slavery. These are all weird, I think.
Wow.
You know, I've been thinking about this, and I wonder if just more media attention is enough to bring you up in the polls. Like, just even if you're saying crazy things, if just more time on the news and more images and more time talking about you actually really significantly influences like the masses of voters. And I wonder if that's Trump's strategy and that's what he knows and what he's manipulating. And I wonder if Carson is exaggerating intentionally in a similar way.
I think it's Trump's strategy, maybe. But I'm not sure Carson
has a strategy. Is it much more nuts than building a wall between here and Mexico?
Wait, is Carson the one that lied about the West Point? Thing. Yeah, bold-faced lie.
That cheesed me off.
He said he got a full ride to West Point.
He didn't even apply.
Did he not?
No.
He did not apply.
All right, that's...
It was a pretty big lie.
It was a bold-faced lie, you're right.
And then there was...
I got a full ride scholarship to medical school.
It's like, I'm a neurosurgeon, I can just say anything.
And there's the whole thing about how, it's hard for me to believe that we're talking about how, you know, a presidential candidate like once tried to stab his friend and, you know, yeah, I did. Yeah. I did try to stab my friend.
Wait, who was that?
Elect me for president.
Carson.
When he was a young man, didn't he
stab his friend?
When he was a young man, he was a bit of a hothead, and something he's gained control over is justifiably proud to have, you know, overcome that particular part of his childhood. There was concerns that this was actually not a true story.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like a hothead. Maybe he took something out of the brain.
Which was extremely puzzling to almost everybody, because why would you say, as a presidential candidate, yeah, I once tried to, you know, cut somebody, but, you know, I'm better now. But actually, it turned out to actually...
Then I channeled that negative emotion. I sublimated it into neurosurgery.
He does sound like one
now
of those
I get
people...
All stabby.
I stabbed his brain.
Stabby brain! He does have the vocal demeanor of somebody who has like a lot of repressed rage, and so talks very slowly and softly.
Our body language experts have identified repressed rage.
This is based on like an N of 2 in total personal observation.
Keep going, Dave.
Well, so apparently, though, it turns out his mother, in a newspaper article recently found by BuzzFeed, you know, the journalists are, you know, anyway, BuzzFeed found an article that actually confirmed his mother once said in an interview a long time ago, 1997, I think it was, that, yeah, he did try to stab his friend. The knife bounced off the belt buckle, and Ben Carson had a sort of coming to Jesus moment where he was like, you know, no, that's not cool.
He now has entire walls of rooms adorned with belt buckles.
Yes.
Actually,
in the shape of Jesus.
That's another article I read recently.
You can actually, they have pictures of his house, and it's pretty creepy.
Really?
Lots of paintings of him.
Oh,
lots
himself.
Of like awards, lots of like misspelled Bible quotes.
That's just amazing.
It's just
he also has lots of like sketchy ties to like large corporations.
Manitech.
Yeah,
who doesn't know?
I was just going to say,
I want a shadowy connection to a corporation.
How do we get in on this?
The reason I bring
up... They give it to you at the final graduation ceremony. Here's your first sketchy connection.
Oh, man, I match terribly.
The reason I bring all this up is because I read this article on Alternet, which says that the reason we're all so puzzled by this is because we're all kind of confused about the definition of smart, or at least the media and... probably mainstream America is confused about the definition.
I would say like humans in general.
The definition of smart that they gave was actually, I thought, one of the better ones I'd heard. Smart is a multi, this is a quote, smart is a multifaceted cognitive feature composed of excellent analytical skills, possession of an extensive knowledge base, emphasis that is easily and frequently augmented, possession of a good memory, and being readily curious about the world, willing, even eager to reject previously accepted notions in the face of new data. Being smart includes having the ability to analyze new data for validity and thinking creatively, draw new insights from existing common knowledge.
See, I don't like that definition, because I think this is the problem with our trying to define intelligence, is we're trying to group it into one word and make it one thing. But I don't think it is. I think it can manifest through so many different ways. There's a lot of people that read off the definition that might not have a great memory, but are still considered geniuses, are still considered brilliant, but because of other things like their creative ability, their ability to problem solve. I think that there's lots of different types of intelligence, and I think that's one thing that people don't acknowledge, and I think that's what you see with Ben Carson. Like, I would say he's very intelligent, but it's just an example of many different types of intelligence.
Here's the thing, though, that people don't... I mean, it's very possible to be very intelligent and educated and have delusional beliefs, like to have cognitive dissonance, and people think that's not possible, but it's very possible. You know, I think that's where people are getting confused.
Yeah,
there are a lot of very smart people that have eccentric, non-standard beliefs, and you'd think like, oh well, you're a scientist or you're a doctor, like why don't you test this? And you know, it's just a interesting artifact that a lot of like hyper intelligent people have, is this eccentricity.
I think it makes sense, though. I think it's still consistent. It might not seem so at first, but when you really think about how these people think and approach the world and analyze things almost to a detriment, you can see how they can come up with conclusions that might not actually fit perfectly.
Yeah, to be a conspiracy theorist, like, you need to be hyper analytical, right? Yeah.
Because that shit takes
they
work.
Would never they would right. never come right. up with all these like moving parts if they weren't super
right.
smart.
So I'd say I'd say that there's an aspect of intelligence that's there, but in some other places full-blown conspiracy theorist might be lacking.
Or like my dad said, you can have book smarts, but that doesn't mean you have common sense.
Mm-hmm. You could just be a pile of potatoes.
It's gonna be my new insult. God, you're such a pile of potatoes.
God, you look exactly like Dave's iPad's lock screen.
Well, on that note.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening this week to the Short Code Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, and we really would love it if you would, just go over to theshortcode.com and look up one of the many ways that this is possible. We have a phone number, we have a Facebook page, we have a Twitter feed, we have something you can speak into your computer. I have tried
little gnomes
to make it as incredibly easy as possible for you to get in touch with us, and we love that because it means we can talk about what you want to talk about. And I don't have to scour the internets for things to talk about. The show is brought to you by The Strange World We Live In and a generous donation from the Carver College of Medicine student government. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our theme music is by Dr. Vox. And we have another theme that's currently playing right now by some other guy.
CTC.
We will... our intern is Corey Christensen.
We're spudding out here.
We'll talk to you in a week.